Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future we all hope for. Now, today we are in the unusual position. It's not common that we get together. We do it from time to time where we're together. And so it's quite obvious who I'm joined by for those of you watching. But for those of you listening, welcome the wonderful John Curtis.
Hello, it's wonderful to be here because we're at the London EV Show recording live today, and this is just a buzz. Can't believe we're getting to do this. Pablo, who we got with us?
Well, we always promise you innovators, pioneers, and collaborators, and we are in no exception. Again, as always, we have got the wonderful Indiva Singh all the way from EV Age in India. Welcome, Indiva.
Thanks, Paul.
Really great to have you with us. And what has brought you to the London EV Show?
London is fast becoming the capital for new EV launches. And there are so many new brands, interesting startups launching their products in London. And I believe that, UK is transitioning to the green future really fast. So here to understand how the market is going, what are the opportunities here, and meet wonderful innovators around the world.
Fantastic. Now, I happen to know that you've got a particular innovation of your own that I think the appetite is to bring that whole product here to the UK, isn't it?
That's what we are exploring, right? We develop electric trucks in India,
right.
And we have been manufacturing them for the last 4 years and selling them in India already, working with fleets of large retailers, e-retailers, large manufacturers, and now we believe that our product is mature enough to work towards the more developed countries.
So what scale of business do you do in India? How many trucks do you make every month or every year?
Yes, so we started series production almost a year back, and now we are producing close to 50 trucks a month. And hopefully we'll scale to 250 trucks a month in the next quarter or so.
And are you finding that it's corporate buyers, bigger businesses that are coming to you and saying, yes, we want those trucks? Or is it the smaller and medium-sized businesses who are getting ahead of the curve of moving to zero emission?
Very interesting question here. And my experience selling trucks in India has been that the initial transition started with the bigger buyers because they had their ESG targets, they had electrification targets, and they wanted to go green. But electrification beyond the ESG imperative is also an economically better option, especially for the fleets and commercial trucks, and the electric trucks that we produce are a good alternative. And once people start to realize the gains that they can get from this particular product, the smaller and the medium buyers transition much faster. So the trials would be for the larger ones, but once mature, the smaller ones are the faster to transition their fleets. So if you see a percentage of fleets, the smaller fleets are having higher percentage of electrification over a period of time, at least our customers.
And I think that's really interesting. We've seen, as you pointed out, in the UK, we are seeing that transition happen, aren't we? And we've seen it in the cars, but the reason we saw it in the cars was because For us as company car users, if we were in our tax system, we get a lot of money and a very smart car. So economically, it makes sense. But what you're telling me is that the big companies are testing this and proving the fact, but you're seeing greater productivity, greater efficiency, and lower cost for running the vehicles that you're producing.
Yes, absolutely. You see, electric truck would be running on fuel, which is energy produced by the main power plants. It has an efficiency of 70 to 80% from the grid to the wheels. You'll lose 10 to 15% efficiency, at best 20%. Whereas the energy lost in a diesel vehicle, trucks are mostly diesel, would be 60 to 70%. All of the others are either lost in heat, because the combustion engine is what we call fire encapsulated within a small container,
yes,
or the fumes that come out, which pollute our environment eventually. So there's almost a 20 to 30% efficient utilization of an electric vehicle over the combustion engine vehicles. And that would result eventually in lower costs to run them. It may not be necessarily affordable to start with. It will have a higher upfront cost to transition. However, the total cost of ownership over a period of time is going to be far lower than a gas vehicle or a diesel vehicle.
And do you think it's going to take a little longer? So the term that your trucks will run over, is it going to be longer than the typical diesel vehicle, or would you see that total cost of ownership making sense in the typical life cycle that you have in India, maybe here in the UK too?
Of course, there are electric trucks and then there are EV age electric trucks, right? So we have worked over the last 10 years to bring in a lot of innovations, and our biggest innovation is our battery tech, one of the biggest, right? And it is defined by three core things, right? One is the ability to charge the batteries in under 15 minutes, and I'm talking 0 to 100%.
Right.
The ability for the batteries to perform in a wide band of temperatures, plus 65 degrees, ultra important in India, minus 20 degrees, important for Europe. So you have a wider band of temperature in which our batteries can perform. And thirdly is the longevity of our batteries. A traditional battery pack may be good for 2,000 to 3,000 charge discharge cycles. Ours is good for 10,000. So we are actually looking at 1 million miles that can be generated from our battery pack, thereby making it the lowest cost per charge on the vehicle and potentially more sustainable, because what others do once, we do three times on the same battery pack.
Tell me, this battery technology that you're using, have you developed that in India, or is this something that you've imported from, let's say, China?
So you invite innovators, collaborators.
Absolutely.
So we collaborated, we innovated.
Yep.
Yeah. The cells, we use the SCIB cells from Toshiba, Japanese cells.
Superb.
But on top of it, we have created a layer of technology in terms of the electronics to manage the pack, the thermal management of the pack, the packaging of the pack, and how to draw out the maximum life out of these batteries. And that's the core software that we developed on top of the core batteries or cells that we got from Japan.
That's fantastic. So you get the reliability of Toshiba.
Yes.
And you get the innovation of India.
Hopefully, yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now, you don't just produce e-trucks or electric trucks. You use the same drivetrain, chassis, everything for another vehicle. Tell us about that.
Yes. So the core to our design philosophy has been the fact that we always have vehicles which can be morphed into different form factors. So you don't need to re-engineer a platform. See, what traditional car manufacturers are doing is theoretically building a platform, spending $1 billion, and then they move to a different form factor, newer platform, and again spend $1 billion. We are a startup with very little funding we raised, so we had to be innovative. And the only option we had was to see how we can repurpose the same platform with better results, better efficiencies. And that's how we developed a platform that can be a larger truck, a 7.5-ton truck, maybe a smaller bus carrying 18 to 24 seat passengers for shuttle runs within the city. It can do small tourist excursions. But all on the same platform. We use the same battery packs, same BMS, same motor controllers, motors, largely the same suspension and brake settings. Just changing the, what we call that phenomena is top hatting. So we have the same skateboard, and then we can top hat it with a truck and a bus or an ambulance if you want it to be. Yeah.
And I mean, this is why I kind of love the commercial vehicle sector, is because whenever we have a vehicle of any kind, it's almost a blank canvas, especially if you get this top hatting kind of approach. I love that phrase. It's such a good phrase. You just sort of put something on and it sort of tells a story or does a job in whatever way it does. I think the options that you've brought to the market are just are just outstanding in terms of the battery technology and stuff like that. The all-important question, of course, on the lips of many people is how far will it go and how quickly will it charge? Well, you answered how quickly will it charge in 15 minutes, but how far will the vehicle go on a single charge?
You know, this is a question, at least in the from the sense of fleets, is misconstructed, right? The question should be how far it can, or how much kilometers or load miles it can do in a day, right? And we at EVH and me personally as a founder, we are more focused on right-sizing vehicles. It's not about just electrification, it's about sustainability. And a lot of it has to do with right-sizing the vehicles, right? If you look at trucks that were made in the 50s, they had a top speed of 40 miles per hour. They had an engine which was 3 times smaller than what we use today. But they delivered the same tonnage of goods, right? So right-sizing is important. And we believe that instead of mining out a lot of minerals from Earth to then eventually produce batteries, which would again go to landfills maybe after 20 years, 25 years, it's better to right-size the battery packs without compromising of the fact that you can deliver 300 to 350 miles in a day by charging it for 15 minutes. You break your day, and by regulation, a commercial driver needs to take a break after 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And what is the vehicle doing? It's a tool to earn money and distribute goods, right? It's not an emotional decision like a personal car, which you would want to take on a road trip across the country, mm-hmm. right? So theoretically, you can push up 300 to 400 miles in a single day on our vehicle. On a single charge, could be between 120 miles, 150 miles, carrying a payload of 4.5 tons.
Which and I think that's the critical thing, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about a 7.5 ton truck here.
Yes.
Now, in the UK, we're used to sort of 3 tons, maybe 3.5 tons in that kind of payload. But you're coming with 4.5 tons, which maximizes the productivity and the efficiency of the vehicle and gives you better bang for your buck. Would that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. As a fleet owner, your biggest responsibility is to make money. The next biggest responsibility is to ensure that your drivers are safe and are having a great experience, and the workload is well distributed. And thirdly, how good your vehicles are for the environment, right? Those are the three priorities from a business I'm talking about, right? And, you know, if you draw a matrix of all these three parameters, what would be the most optimum, right? And the answer is simply how much more goods you can carry with the lowest curb weight. And this we have achieved with a lot of aerospace-grade engineering. We have a team of aerospace engineers already working for us, extensively working on lightweighting the vehicle and yet increasing the safety. I mean, perceptually, a lighter vehicle is a unsafe vehicle, right? But aircrafts are the lightest piece of machinery on this planet. Airbus A380, curb weight of the Airbus A380 would be 38,000 pounds.
So about 16,000 kilos, something like that.
Whereas it can carry a payload of 70,000 pounds.
Which is double, yeah.
Yeah. And they are subject to far more forces when taking off, landing. A lot of pressure on the structure when it is flying. Despite that, trucks, even if they achieve a ratio of 1:2, a half of it, it's a great achievement. So there's a great way to go forward, and you know, planes are the safest instruments, right? The least crashes per mile driven. So I rest my case.
Well, we've all bought in, haven't we?
Yeah, I definitely
have. So anyway, a little bit of context here. I know that you'll have been listening so far, and you'll have heard a lot of background noise because we're in the London EV show, and it is an exciting place to be. But do you know what? I'm interested in it. What has been your inspiration? So in the UK, we're a bit crass at times. We just go, oh, we're not doing it because China and India are churning out all of the emissions. So it's all everybody else's fault. It's not ours. And so you're from India and a country that we associate with lots of emissions. But yet here you are kind of producing a vehicle that is going to make a huge difference. Has that been an inspiration to you, or is it more generally just being sustainable and doing it in a better way?
So, as a country, if you see at the per capita emissions that India produces, we are much lower than the... So there's a global north and the global south, we have to accept that. And if you see the global north as a general, I'm not talking country specific and I don't have the exact data on that, the per capita production of carbon or pollutants, India is much lower than the global north. However, there are pockets in India, large cities, it is unlivable there. Today, and I've got a habit now, because I come from India, there's a lot of pollution for some reasons there. The AQI, the Air Quality Index of London today was 3. New Delhi today is around 230. And the news in India is that finally we have better days in New Delhi. Because 15 days back, it was close to 800, 700 in certain areas in a city, right?
Yeah.
Now, what does that do? It's like smoking 3 packs of cigarette, even if you are a non-smoker. And I was there in New Delhi for some work, and yeah, your eyes start to water out. It's pretty bad. And beyond us feeling the problem, the biggest point that changed me towards this was the fact that kids that are born in cities like New Delhi, Bangalore, or cities which are highly polluted in India, they tend to have lungs which are almost 20% smaller than the global average. Now, here we are as a race, not making the world a better place for the next generation, but having a handicap for them even before they are born. And somebody has to take action. We can talk about it over coffee and over drinks and then just forget it, or we take some action. And I thought, we need to do something about it at least, and at least create some parity in this world, right? And that's how the whole concept for EVH came into being.
So let's pick up on that. You have an opportunity to take Indian technology and innovation through collaboration into the whole country, and then grow from India outwards to help have a big sphere of influence and to make change happen. What's the transition look like? Where are you going on your journey? So from India to where, and then presumably to the UK?
Exactly. So, I believe in democratizing technology that you develop. All the technologies that we at EVH and me as the founder are trying to develop or focus our strategic goals towards is towards creating a better world. Mm. And we need to touch as many lives as we can. Working in India has its advantages, disadvantages, right? You learn to be frugal in your innovation. You learn to spend millions instead of billions to do something, mm-hmm. and yet be successful. And you have to be price competitive, which is really difficult thing to achieve.
Yes.
If you learn to do that, and you can get the right kind of quality into your product, you can do a larger benefit for the world at large.
Yes.
And why not do that? Because that's the core goal as an organization, mm-hmm. right? It's about humane capitalism, if I may say so. So the idea is to take this technology to countries and see how many lives we can touch.
Yes.
How many communities we can make more livable through deliveries happening in our truck, right? And that's our objective. Mm. And if this helps, take the green ambitions of UK forward, we are happy to be a part of the nation building exercise.
Brilliant.
We are building it for the future generations. And what we have built is a global platform. There's also a perceptive barrier that the quality of Indian products or vehicles may not be at par with what the European standards are. But we have a global platform meeting all international standards. And we want to leverage this technology into parts where we believe we can make a difference. We are already branching out in the Middle East. Vehicles would be on the road in the next few months. And UK becomes a natural extension because India and UK are a right-hand drive country, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, in strategic terms, how do you go about taking a product from India and delivering it on the ground in, let's say, the UK, and how do you support and service that vehicle? Because that's key for business. They need to understand that, yes, you have all the certification and you've been through the testing processes. Yeah. It's a good vehicle. But good vehicles stop working sometimes. That's a cost to business. How do you plan to support those vehicles when they're here?
So a large part of what we are doing at EVH is also governed by our manufacturing strategy. We see a lot of new startups come and go in the EV space, and it's sad when a lot of great products have to suddenly vanish. But we also realize that a lot of the companies who are trying to develop new products are not making them ready to be industrialized. They may be great products to be there on a wallpaper, but on the shop floor, they may fail the test. So we have spent a lot of our time in trying to industrialize our products. That's the first thing. Second, we work on our M-Cube manufacturing facility. And to just digress slightly on the topic, because we need to understand the automotive history. Any disruption that has happened in the automotive world has been governed by two things: change in the powertrain technology and change in the manufacturing technology. We had steam engines start in the UK, and then the fuel changed from steam to oil because apparently it was available to burn lamp fuel, easily available at the grocery store. So they made vehicles that could use the same fuel. And that was a combustion engine which brought the era of automobiles to us. And then it became democratized with Henry Ford bringing the line production system. The next big change happened when the Japanese went global, 70s. They came with more efficient powertrains and just-in-time manufacturing. And we believe that a lot of the companies are doing electric powertrains, but the next level of change in manufacturing is going to define who will survive this wave. And we are moving away from the production line. We are creating vehicles on modular cells, so we don't need to have a huge warehouse where a continuous line of production takes place. We can have modular cells producing whatever job is given to them. They are flexible enough to do any job that is needed on that particular cell. So it reduces the footprint of your manufacturing setup. It allows for more efficient utilization of people to manufacture that. And we can bring this M-Cube to the UK so that we can be close to our customers where they need our vehicles eventually. So that's our objective.
It's so interesting, but I'm sitting here thinking, John, we've talked to many people in this position that have done some great things. We've found out where they come from. And you've got a lot of knowledge. Talking about the automotive industry and the history, what got you interested, maybe as a small boy, and just as you grew up, what gave you this vision, this dream to set up back 10 years ago, an automotive company that is arguably nobody had ever really thought about, perhaps, in your situation, and even in the UK,
Honestly, the motivation was to do something good for mankind, right? It happened to be the automobile industry. as a family, I've been privileged enough to be associated with you know, businesses which have been heavy into the mechanical industry, right? For example, my grandfather set up the first combustion engine manufacturing facility last century, 1910, in India.
It comes out.
So, in India? Yeah. In India. The in first India, one yeah, in yeah, India.
Yeah. That was the first combustion engine designed and manufactured in India, 1910. And, you know, so we have a rich lineage and a lot to prove when you're part of the family. Yeah, so that's there. But also, the biggest thing has been the fact that we need to do something better for mankind, yeah. Right? And this has been a part of our family tradition also. Like the combustion engines were made to automate, you know, the grain grinding machines because they were manually driven at that point of time. And it was a lot of physical labor to just have bread on the table, right? And that was a tool to make life easy, right? It was not a very sustainable tool, I must say. So I have to right the wrong, you know? Right? But that was the core thing, right? So there's a lineage that we have been innovators. It's been part of our family. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity to just, you know, help mankind infinitely. And you got to be really lucky, right? Yes. You know, like it's said that people born in the 50s and 60s innovated the most, right? Because the whole internet was formed in the 70s, 80s by those people, right? And I think for us, you know, the Gen Z, this is the time and this is the industry that will change the world.
Yeah.
So luck has to be on your side. Yes. You just can't start a car company by being aggressive.
But do you know what? I was told once, because somebody said, oh, well done on that deal. I said, oh, I just got a bit lucky. And they said to me, the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Yeah, you can't substitute hard work with anything.
No.
And it's a tough journey from ideating a product to actually selling a product.
Mm.
And then having a repeat sale on that product is even harder.
Mm.
And there are more lows than ups in the whole journey, generally speaking. Yeah.
Well, and I'd love to go there, actually, because, you know, thinking about this journey, and we spoke just before we came on online, as it were, and we talked about resilience. Resilience comes from often having to go through really tough situations, be it in the family, be it in the business. What can you relate back to a really tough situation that gave you that belief in yourself that you will get through the next few things, the resilience to go on and create this business that you've done?
I think the toughest times I've seen through have been while building EVH. Nothing compares to that, honestly. In hindsight, if you ask me, whatever I have been through as a kid or as a young man, sort of is overshadowed by the challenges we faced at EVH, right? I started EVH in 2014. I was crazy enough to think that electric vehicles can work. And having to listen from friends and family every day that, oh man, this is a nice hobby project, but it can't be your life. And still getting up in the morning and doing that.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think to be resilient, you need to be slightly crazy. It's in hindsight, and if you ask me today, right, it doesn't make sense what we went through, or as a company, or me as a founder at some point, or our co-founding team went through that. It doesn't make there's no logic to carry it forward until you're passionate about it, right? So there has to be enough passion to do that. And yeah, so we started 2014, and the biggest thing was, yeah, people saying, hey man, like, it's not possible, you can have a side hobby project. I had built a electric go-kart when I was 16, maybe. So I carried the experience forward.
And the scars.
But they said that, you know, it's great to do it for your hobby or a school project or something. You can't be doing it as your life. So yeah, that was the first one. And then, yeah, I decide, that's it, we're starting EVH. Okay, what next?
And that was my question.
Yeah.
What next? So here is a man who is the Indian Elon Musk to me. I see you and I think, here is a visionary who sees a problem and goes out to fix it. And you do it in a humble, kind, generous way. You're a good man. I just get that sense from you. Highly intelligent, highly driven. You're not loud, brash, aggressive, awkward. You have a great deal to offer the world, and we need people like you. So where are those skills going to take you, do you think? Beyond truck, beyond minibus and coach, to something else? Do you have a vision of what that might be?
Unfortunately, yes, you may call us to be visionaries and all, but you see, our story is lot like the EV Cafe story. A lot of the things happened by accident. I started off making a car company because when you start, it's glamorous to make a car. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, right, you dig back into why you started it in the first place, to build sustainable mobility solutions. And then I realized, like, if I have a car sitting in my garage 85% of the time, I use it to go from home to office, back home. On a weekend, I may go for a longer drive maybe, or use it for shopping or whatnot. I'm not actually contributing a lot to global pollution. What is contributing from the mobility sector to global pollution are the trucks that are running on the streets. They run from 12 to 18 hours a day, larger engines, larger emissions, and that's what needs to change. And yeah, so we center back and say, okay, your aim is to make mobility solutions that are sustainable and not great cars. Right, so anything, as far as I'm concerned, which would help the world move forward or think ahead, is going to be our vision, right?
I just wonder, I have this, we talk about vision. I have a vision of an EV age vehicle that has the bright colors that you have in India on your trucks. Is that going to be possible? Can we see all of the finery of Indian transport? Because it is brilliant. Trucks are part of your heritage. Do you think that you will have that heritage in your vehicles, or will it just be another box to do a job?
Yeah, that's a great question to ask, honestly. I can delve into design principles and how products need to be more vernacular, so that they can be. End of the day, it's not the fleet that runs the truck; it's a driver. It's a man in the machine.
Yes.
And you have to do things which are great for the man in the machine. So it makes Indianization great. I will do it. If it makes it to be more British, yeah, we'll do that, right? But it's about the man in the machine and what you do for him or her,
right?
The safety, the ergonomics, and you know, whatever works, right? And we as a company at EVH, we are open to ideas. We are here to create products by listening to what our customers want. We just don't want to design a product and just shove it down their throat, right?
Yeah.
And I'm completely with you, Indiva, because you know, when you think your focus on the driver, the driver here is different to the driver in Australia and America and China and India and all of the variety that is. And so I think we have to be somewhat pragmatic, because like you and I might love the flamboyance.
I'll just give you a small data, right? The average height of an Asian male is 50 percentile. A European male would be 90 percentile.
Unless it's him.
Oh, he's still 65. Right? Don't ask me about the female, because no research has been done. I'm not doing that research, so don't hold me by that. But, you know, a cabin that is good for India may be too small for Britain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we are here to make those changes.
Right.
We are here to understand what is exactly needed by the man in the machine that's going to deliver.
The man in the machine bit for me, because I mean, you know that I work a lot in vans, but commercial vehicles, so the vans, you know, the smaller vehicles. But more and more I'm seeing that need within the within the truck sector, and what's stood out to me is where people have looked to innovate to meet the need of those people getting in and out of those vehicles.
Yeah, I'll tell you a small example from the trucks that we make in India, slightly smaller. They're used sometimes for last mile delivery as well, and they deliver 150 packages a day. Mm. A door weighs on an average, if it's a crash reliant door, it weighs 12 to 14 kilograms. If a driver has to get down, open it, close it, 300 times, plus 50 times he goes for a break or needs to get down for some work to get something signed or something, 350 times, 15 kilograms. He's carrying more load than the truck, just opening and closing the door. Right. And that is something that needs to be innovated.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So that innovation could be Indian, it could be British, but what is right for the job, yeah?
And that's it. Great looking at that. I mean, I've known of one company that has even looked to a train door that would automatically open, so that the driver never has to open that door. I'm not suggesting that that's a good idea, but it's an idea that people have thought about, because the driver, the man in the machine, I love that, is so important. And and this is the approach that I think you're taking, which is unique, is that care for the individual, the lungs of the children that are 20% smaller, the wanting to leave that legacy that will make a difference to that incredible statistic around New Delhi in terms of and just bringing those pollutants down and reducing or improving the air quality. And if that can happen here in our context in the UK, then I think that is a tremendous thing. If you could change something just at the click of a finger, what would that thing be that would make, I mean, we could say, you know, world peace and all that sort of stuff, but I'm more thinking in the context of what you actually do in terms of delivering EV age and the trucks that will come as a result. What would it be? What are those barriers that you just want to remove?
Right sizing.
Okay.
When your average speed limit in towns and cities is 30 miles, I was in South Wales, it was 20 miles in certain areas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Why do you need a truck that does 120 miles top speed?
Right.
What that does is effectively, as a manufacturer, I have to give a larger powertrain, which will consume larger energy. And in theory, we are unsustainably sustainable.
Yeah.
I'm still making an electric vehicle which is unsustainable in my mind.
Yeah. We're overusing the resources that we've got,
yeah,
right?
Like, even if you look at cars today, right? We have, 200 horsepower, 300 horsepower cars, whereas it's two people driving at a speed of 30 miles an hour average. You may need just 20 horsepower to do that job. And we have driven in horse carts for two centuries before this, right?
It feels to me that you want to remove our ego.
I guess so. I don't know.
Because what else drives us? What else? Why else do we need a 120 miles an hour vehicle or 300 brake horsepower or all of this? So I have a phrase: right vehicle, right job, fit for purpose. So for me, that's and whenever I'm talking to people, I'm saying, listen, this transition that we're going through right now gives us an opportunity to have a blank canvas, just to start again and look at what we do and how we do it and right size.
Yeah, right size. We can also, I mean, there's regulation. I can get started on that too, right?
Get to click things once.
Top hat the vehicle, right? Why have a commercial vehicle and a bus separate, right? You can use the same vehicle for two purposes.
Yes. Yeah.
Reduce the congestion in our cities.
Yes. do you know what? You inspire. You absolutely do. And you use the word humble, Paul. And I think that's really interesting. That's part of your makeup, isn't it? You are a humble man who is driven to deliver something, quietly getting on with it, making it happen with a huge potential impact. I've got a final question for you. How can the UK, how can we support innovation like yours in our marketplace? Paul is hugely connected. He has so much to offer. I have loved talking to you. How can we support you better in getting from where you are to where you want to be?
Well, I think the biggest support we can get from you would be to pass this message of right-sizing. You influence a large number of people, and people listen to you. You have an impact on people's lives, right? And it's just not about EVAs, right? It's about as a community of automotive manufacturers, automotive users, consumers, yeah, fleets, how can we bring the deterioration of the world that is happening from a environmental perspective? We need to pause that, right? This summer was horrible in the Europe completely, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't want that to go worse than this, right? Mm. We want to reverse that and reverse climate change. You know, and there are so many things that are happening, right? Yes. So putting things into perspective, the wheat crop that used to grow during at the Nile was 6 feet tall. Today, any wheat plantation you see is less than 4 feet.
Wow.
And the nutrients that you get from the grains, the ancient grains and what we get now, are much different. And what climate change is going to do is going to impact food production, which would lead to problems much worse than what we are facing today in terms of scarcity of food, water, and we are headed towards irreversible change, and we can stop it now in the next few decades, or we can never. So if you can get this message through to people that we need to right size, we need to economize things, it's just for better for our future generations, you know, simply put.
And I think that's a perfect place on which to finish, because it's an impassioned plea. It's a very well argued plea as well, with that the facts. Nutrients, the size of wheat. Who knew? I certainly didn't. And you know, and the fact, because we have there was a young lady called Ella who died in 2013, Ella Roberta, her mum is championing an air quality law, that we have a right to good air quality, and it's absolutely on the back. She had asthma, sorry, to give that context, and of course that's an infection of the lungs, and you know, she died as a result of really air quality, and that was exactly directly that. And then to hear that children are being born with lungs that are 20% smaller. I think what we've had today, John, is just an incredible lesson on the reasons why we should be doing this, but also a real injection of optimism about the solution that's coming. And EVH are bringing a solution. There will be many other solutions, we know, but you don't seem afraid by that. You don't want to dominate the world. You just want to bring your solution to market. Would that be right?
Yes, we just want to play our part in making the world a better place.
Brilliant.
It's magic. It genuinely is.
And if we can all do that, yeah, play our part, yeah, to make the world a better place, and even care enough about that, then we'd be in a better place. Well, that's it, everybody. This is Indiver. You need to check out EVH. You need to watch them, because they're going to be coming to the UK. They're led by an incredible man who has got wisdom in abundance. And we're going to see a really great product come to our country and make a difference, because it's focused on drivers and the climate and the economy. And that has got to be good news. So thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And check out all of our podcasts on the EV Cafe website. And do follow Indevir. You can get him on LinkedIn. We'll put the link in the comments, as always. And keep checking back for more just like this from the EV Cafe. Thanks ever so much, everybody, and have a great day.